All right, let's keep it going. The next speaker for the CRA in Practice Dev Room is Achim Friedland, and he's going to talk about CRA by design, protocol embedded compliance for EV charging infrastructure. Take it away, sir.
Oh, thank you. I hope you can hear me. Yes, as you see, we keep in the area of electric mobility, but we switch a little bit to private battery electric e-mobility. And as you can see, already 2,400 years ago, Mr. Plato tried to charge his e-donkey, and it didn't work. The problem here is, EV charging is no longer really a nice Internet of Broken Things topic. It's getting like Deutsche Bahn into the area of critical infrastructure. But the manufacturers are perhaps not yet there. This talk is more about architecture, not legal interpretations. And it's a little bit, because we are practical guys, a mixture of Cyber Resilience Act and NIS2, because both, from a technical perspective, solve similar problems, even when the regulation is very different. So keep this in mind. I'm not a lawyer here. Come on. You have noticed immobility is exploding, but it's still the same old ship and forget mentality. Security, resilience, updatability, lifecycle management, audibility. It's a little bit better in Germany because, you know, Germans like it in a correct way, but Germans are also very known for they do not care about the end user. So this created a lot of technical debt over the last 15 years of e-mobility. And how can we start to solve that? One problem is EV charging is not a very simple domain. Perhaps the most common use case is when you think you go to a charging station, stand in front of a charging station, you have a display. Then it's quite simple because you have a product with digital elements and a user is using it directly. That's fine. That is more or less also in scope of the Cyber Resilience Act. But we are also connecting a car. Perhaps we're sitting in a car and remote control the charging station via the car. Then the Cyber Resilience Act is no longer the only thing we have to respect. There are other regulations. We have to do something about it. Normal way would be now we open Excel, create a mapping table between the one regulation and the other regulation, and just be happy with compliance. But again, we are not here for compliance. We are here for architecture and technology. The next thing is we have a problem. Perhaps we have a charging station, perhaps we have a local controller because of energy grid swings and so on. But then we go through a long path of software as a service systems. So they are not regulated in the Cyber Resilience Act. Perhaps some of them will be in the future regulated under NIS2. We have some strange definition in the Cyber Resilience Act, the foreseeable use. And the foreseeable use, obviously, they are included in this path. So at the moment, we do not know how we really have to solve this problem. We will see in the future if those entities which are software as a service will be somehow regulated, or if a manufacturer can say something about the minimum requirements of these entities in the middle. But at the moment, we don't know. So we had a lot of other nice regulations. Everybody knows we use RFID cards for authentication at charging station. They do not provide any kind of security. We have other strange things like MAC addresses of the car, which, you know, is even worse than RFID. We have a German calibration law, as I said, a wonderful regulation. We have digital signatures on measurement values. But how the user should use it and how the user even gets them, that's not part of this regulation. So it's not working. We have ISO 15118, which is talking a lot about cryptography and so on, But it's just the first meter. It's just on the charging cable. And we have a radio equipment directive, and it's active since last August. And we see the only, I should not cross this line. And we see the what the manufacturers are really doing is they do not improve security. They remove features that operators depend on, because they argue now, oh, it's now secure and you no longer can use this. But for example, when you want to read your own diagnostics log files, you can download it from the device. It will be encrypted and you can send it to us via email. We send you the log files back via email. I do not know if this is really a solution to a security problem, but this is what happens in the market today. So I would say EU Red also failed. When specs fail to produce trust, well, we know it already. Secure is not deployed. Security compliance is not trust. And the intent to improve security, but with a solution which lowers security, like this, we send you the diagnostic information via email, is not perhaps the evidence that we really produced more security. And as you know, once a standard or specification is out, it ossifies very fast, and you have really hard time to improve something. So we want to use now both regulations as design inputs and go away from security and resilience just as best effort, and happens perhaps when a manufacturer has a good day or on a bad day, we don't have so much real security. So for the engineers, what does this mean? We have now to think a little bit what must be enabled or disabled by default for this charging station. What kind of data or information must be observable? What must be provable years later? You know, when we talk about charging stations, we have payments and we have regulations far away from technology. Let's say when you have a business process, you have to provide evidence, store this evidence and prove it even years later. That's not where EV charging is currently. But also the uncomfortable truth for regulators is in e-mobility, we have not the simple relationship between a manufacturer and a user. A user is very often operating more than one device from more than one manufacturer with more than one firmware version. So interoperability is a key factor in this area. We have the same product type with product type, I mean now charging stations from different manufacturers, and how do we model it that they are somehow interoperable? Because inconsistency of deployments and inconsistency of compatibility or interoperability will also increase our systematic risks, which are important under NIST 2 for the entire chain or even for the product itself, so for the charging station itself when we look at the Cyber Resilience Act. Luckily, since 15 years, there exists an organization, it's called Open Charge Alliance. They produce a protocol. It's open, it's not like the typical ISO standards, it's really as we like it. As engineers, it's nearly as open as EETF RFCs, but it comes from another direction. It's a management protocol how to talk to your charging station. So the first user of a charging station is more or less the operator. The protocol encodes some key assumptions, syntax behavior, error semantics, and so on, what you imagine. And defaults matter, of course, more than options. But we also see a lot of vendor hacks, because obviously, when we try to discuss this, come to common ground, this takes always a lot of time. And vendors are or have always some time pressure to get something on the market. There's also a project because, as I said, Open Charge Alliance is only in the first step, so the direct connection to the charging station. There's a project by NGA0, it's called EV Quality Infrastructure. You can go to Building K, get some stickers for this project. It's basically extending OCPP on the other entities which you have seen between the charging station and the end user, so all the middlemen which are required for EV roaming. So technical specifications break under regulation. We have the same protocol, but too many rules. So the same protocol, but different acceptable risks. Why? Because charging station, you know, charging station can be at home. At home, you have an operational environment, which is perhaps not that complex. But you can also have charging stations in the streets, and they are regulated under NIS2, because they are now critical infrastructure, high-power charging stations. So you have a wide variety of operational environments, and therefore very different acceptable risks, and you have a very different operational environment, because you can imagine working behind a Fritz box is very different to working behind a professional operated network at a big charging station operator. Therefore, we came to already a year ago, we started discussing the Cyber Resilience Act in the Open Charge Alliance. We came to the conclusion we have to split the protocol specification into a technical layer, which gives us just the information, the bits and bytes like, yes, we use TLS, yes, we don't use the very broken algorithms of TLS, but we do not over-specify how we should use TLS, for example. Because this we have seen in 15.11.8, this is very awful when you over-specify something and then you have an interoperability problem between the different versions of the same protocol. And your car is again not charging because the charging station expects TLS 1.3 and you only can talk TLS 1.2. And it's explicitly forbidden to be downward compatible. So we created this separation. We have a technical layer, we have a secure specification, and the security operations guide is then specific for every operational environment, which tells me, okay, when you're a charging station, you're at home indoors. That's totally nice because you have an easy life. When you're at home outdoors, it's already getting a little bit complicated because now you have no physical access security anymore. Then you have to implement something perhaps differently or enable some options in a different way. This allows also security and resilience to evolve, because what we really, really want to avoid is that we soon have a TLS version 1.4 and again nothing is working because the ISO standard defined we have to use TLS 1.3. That's not really helpful. And it's also, from my point of view, a false kind of security. So we come up from this, what we see perhaps in this Cyber Resilience Act, this very simple architecture, to a much more complex architecture with different manufacturers. They have different products, and we split now our protocol in more or less three layers. This idea is also supported by CyberStand, but, working for CyberStand is not as easy as I thought in the first place, but you will get some nice deliverables. The next thing is, as I said, Open Charge Alliance already exists since 15, the protocol exists since 15 years, Open Charge Alliance exists since 11 years. So more or less everywhere in the market we already have this kind of software stewards or voluntary secure attestation frameworks the Cyber Resilience Act is speaking of. So we have some organization in the middle who already defines, implements some parts of our obligations of the Cyber Resilience Act. And on the other side of the interface could provide us some guarantees, because Open Charge Point Protocol defines a testing tool. Wouldn't it be nice if the outcome of the testing tool would already give us the assumption of conformity, perhaps 50% of it? Because then also the Open Charge Alliance has a much better standing, because it's really solving problems for the people, even for the regulations, not only for interoperability. This was the first part. Then the next technical issue is Cyber Resilience Act and NIS2 are currently living outside of our protocol stacks. So when we consume a service, which might be produced by a product, or it's a software as a service, we usually start at a networking layer. My preferred example are the time servers of the German PTB, Deutsche Physikalisch-Technische Bundesanstalt. They produce legal time in Germany. So charging stations have to consume this legal time, but in end effect, they just give you four URLs. Here, please speak NTP to us. Of course, we can now switch from a normal NTP to network time secure, and everything is a bit more secure. But our resilience is not yet solved. It's just authentic time, but nothing more. Wouldn't it be nice if we have, okay, thank you. Wouldn't it be nice if we have some layer on top of this, where we can say, okay, we not only give you the information on a strange website that we have four servers and perhaps which version of the NTS protocol to speak to us, could we create some layer 8, I call it, where we define the governance of this service so that we, like Plato with this theory of forms, of in German Ideenlehre, describe in an abstract way, yes, we provide a time service, we give you all the other metadata, like the typical DNS records for services, or yeah, the more modern version of services, DNA for cryptographic key management, and service descriptions, contact information, all the stuff you know from the Cyber Resilience Act, what you should provide. You get this in a JSON, you get this via a well-known URL. This pattern is also not an invention of us. This well-known URLs are defined in a couple of RFCs. And we create a new buzzword for all the people who love buzzwords of a digital service passport, which is directly related to the digital product passport we have on the other side with the regulations for products. There we have the same, we consume this service. For example, a charging station consumes the time service now, meaning it no longer addresses four servers. It addresses this JSON document and gets all the information it needs from this document. So the endpoints, but also what about the quality of the time, what are the delay differences between the responses, so that I can say this is legal time. Now, come on. As we have seen, Cyber Resilience Act devices shall expose some of those, their information. They have a bit other information, as you know already from Cyber Resilience Act, also vulnerability information, but also here, especially firmware update information. And in the end, this enables a much more efficient error report, as all context information is directly available, because what you really know when you have to operate devices, when something is not working, you get an email with the word, it's not working, but nothing more. Wouldn't it be nice if the device could add automatically all this context information and send the email not via email to a catch-all, but to a specified URL. And so we come to the conclusions. First, open source protocols, not only open source software projects, should, from our point of view, become cyber resilient act stewards. Please split your protocol in a technical base layer and a security operations guide. Provide governance metadata of all your services and products via what I call now Platon's layer. And consume the governance metadata to improve all your ongoing processes within your company, because support requests are really a hell when you don't have the right context information. So now Platon is happy.
Fantastic. Thanks.